Chapter 22. By October, Xanadu was nearly finished. The three of them drove out to it as usual one Saturday afternoon. "The build is only 6 months behind schedule. Now he says he'll be finished by Christmas. And I haven't found the courage yet to ask him which Christmas," Sean remarked. "It's all the alterations Candy has thought up," Duff said. "She's got the poor man so confused he doesn't know whether he's a boy or a girl."
"Well, if you'd consulted me in the first place, it would have saved a lot of trouble," Candy told them.
The carriage turned in through the marble gates, and they looked around them. Already the lawns were smooth and green, and the jacaranda trees lining the drive were shoulder high.
"I think it's going to live up to its name. That gardener's doing a good job," Sean spoke with satisfaction.
"Don't you call him a gardener to his face, or we'll have a strike on our hands. He's a horticulturalist,"
Duff smiled across at him.
"Talking about names," Candy interrupted, "don't you think Xanadu is, well, a bit outlandish?"
"No, I do not," Sean said. "I picked it myself. I think it's a damn good name.
It's not dignified.
Why don't we call it Fair Oaks? Firstly, because there isn't an oak tree within 50 miles, and secondly, because it's already called Xanadu."
"Don't get cross. It was just a suggestion."
The builder met them at the top of the drive, and they began the tour of the house. That took an hour. Then they left the builder and went out into the garden. They found the gardener with a gang of natives near the north boundary.
"How's it going, Jubert?"
Duff greeted him.
"Not bad, Mr. Charleywood, but it takes time, you know. You've done a damn fine job so far. It's kind of you to say so, sir. When are you going to start laying out my maize?"
The gardener looked surprised. He glanced at Candy, opened his mouth, closed it again, and looked once more at Candy.
"Oh, I've told Jubert not to worry about the maize."
"Why did you do that?"
"I wanted a maize. Ever since I visited Hampton Court as a child, I wanted my own maize."
"They're silly things," Candy told him. "They just take up a lot of space, and they're not even nice to look at." Sean thought Duff was going to argue, but he didn't. He talked to the gardener a little longer, then they walked back across the lawns in front of the house towards the chapel.
"Dufford, I've left my parasol in the carriage. Would you mind getting it for me?"
Candy asked. When Duff was gone, Candy took Sean's arm.
"It's going to be a lovely home. We're going to be very happy here."
"Have you two decided on a date yet?" Sean asked.
"We want the house finished first, so we can move straight in. I think we'll make it sometime in February next year."
They reached the chapel and stood in front of it.
"It's a sweet little church," Candy spoke dreamily. "And such a nice idea of Dufford's, a special church of our own."
Sean shuffled uncomfortably.
"Yes," he agreed. "It's a very romantic idea."
He glanced over his shoulder and saw Duff coming back with the parasol.
"Candy, it's none of my business. I don't know anything about marriage. But I know about training horses. You break them to the halter before you put the saddle on their backs."
"I don't follow you."
Candy looked puzzled. "What are you trying to say?"
"Nothing. Just forget it. Here comes Duff."
When they got back to the hotel, there was a note at the reception desk for Sean. He went through into the main lounge, and Candy went off to check the menu for dinner. Sean opened the envelope and read the note.
"I should like to meet you and Mr. Charleywood to discuss a matter of some importance. I will be at my hotel after dinner this evening, and hope it will be convenient for you to call on me then. N. Hradsky."
Sean passed the note across to Duff.
"What do you suppose he wants?"
He's heard of your deadly skill as a clabby jazz player. He wants to take lessons, Duff answered. Shall we go? Of course. You know I can't resist Norman's exhilarating company. It was a superb dinner. The crayfish, packed in ice, had come up from Cape Town by express coach. Candy, Sean and I are going across to see Hradsky. We might be back a little late, Duff told her when they were finished. As long as it's Hradsky, Candy smiled at him. Don't get lost. I have my spies at the opera house, you know. Shall we take the carriage? Duff asked Sean, and Sean noticed that he hadn't laughed at Candy's joke. It's only 2 blocks. We might as well walk. They walked in silence. Sean felt his dinner settling down comfortably inside him. He belched softly and took another puff from his cigar. When they had almost reached the Grand National Hotel, Duff spoke. Sean? He stopped. Yes, Sean prompted him. About Candy. He stopped again. She's a fine girl, Sean prompted again. Yes, she's a fine girl. Is that all you wanted to say? Well, oh, never mind. Let's go and see what Saul and David want. Max met them at the door of Hradsky's suite. Good evening, gentlemen. I'm so pleased you could come. Hello, Max. Duff went past him to where Hradsky was standing in front of the fireplace. Norman, my dear fellow, how are you? Hradsky nodded an acknowledgement, and Duff took hold of the lapels of Hradsky's coat and adjusted them carefully. Then he picked an imaginary piece of fluff off his shoulder. You have a way with clothes, Norman. Don't you agree that Norman has a way with clothes, Sean? I know of no one else who can put on a 20-guinea suit and make it look like a half-filled bag of oranges. He patted Hradsky's arm affectionately. Yes, thank you, I will have a drink. He went across to the liquor cabinet and poured one for himself. Now, what can you gentlemen do for me? Max glanced at Hradsky, and Hradsky nodded.
I will come to the point immediately, said Max. Our two groups of companies are the largest on the Witwatersrand.
Duff put his glass back on top of the cabinet and dropped his grin. Sean sat down in one of the armchairs, his expression also serious. Both of them could guess what was coming.
In the past, continued Max, we have worked together on numerous occasions, and we have both benefited from it. The next logical step, of course, is to combine our strength, pool our resources, and go together to new greatness. I take it that you are proposing a merger.
Precisely, Mr. Courtney.
A merger of these two vast financial ventures. Sean leaned back in his chair and started to whistle softly. Duff picked up his glass again and took a sip.
Well, gentlemen, what are your feelings on the subject? Asked Max.
Have you got a proposal worked out, Max? Something definite for us to think about?
Yes, Mr. Courtney, I have.
Max went to the stinkwood desk, which filled one corner of the room, and picked up a sheaf of papers. He carried them across to Sean. Sean scanned through it.
You've done quite a bit of work here, Max. It's going to take us a day or two to work out exactly what you are offering.
I appreciate that, Mr. Courtney. Take as long as you wish. We've worked for a month to draw up that scheme, and I hope our labours have not been in vain. I think you will find our offer very generous.
Sean stood up.
We'll contact you again in a few days, Max.
Shall we go, Duff?
Duff finished his drink.
Good night, Max. Look after Norman. He's very precious to us, you know. They went to their building on Eloff Street. Sean let them in through one of the side doors, lit the lamps in his office, and Duff pulled up an extra chair to the desk. By 2 o'clock the following morning, they understood the essentials of Hradsky's offer. Sean stood up and went to open one of the windows, for the room was thick with cigar smoke. He came back and flopped onto the couch, arranged a cushion behind his head, and looked at Duff. "Let's hear what you've got to say." Duff tapped his teeth with a pencil while he arranged his words. "Let's first decide if we want to join with them." "If he makes it worth our while, we do," Sean answered. "I agree with you. But only if he makes it worth our while." Duff laid back in his chair. "Now, the next point. Tell me, laddie, what is the first thing that strikes you about this scheme of Norman's?" "We get nice-sounding titles and fat cash payments, and Hradsky gets control," Sean answered. "You have laid your finger on the heart of it. Norman wants control. More than money, Norman wants control. So that he can sit at the top of the pile, look down on everyone else and say, 'All right, you bastards, what if I do stutter?'" Duff stood up. He walked round the desk and stopped in front of Sean's couch. "Now for my next question. Do we give him control?" "If he pays our price, then we give him control," Sean answered. Duff turned away and went across to the open window. "You know, I rather liked the feeling of being top man myself," he said thoughtfully. "Listen, Duff, we came here to make money. If we go in with Hradsky, we'll make more," Sean said. "Laddie, we've got so much now that we could fill this room waist deep in sovereigns. We've got more than we'll ever be able to spend, and I like being top man. Hradsky's more powerful than we are. Let's face up to that. He's got his diamond interests as well, so you're not top man even now. If we join him, you still won't be top man, but you'll be a damn sight richer." "Unassailable logic," Duff nodded. "I agree with you then. Hradsky gets control, but he pays for it. We'll put him through the ringer until he's dry." Sean swung his legs off the couch. "Agreed. Now, let's take this scheme of his by the throat, tear it to pieces and build it up again to suit ourselves." Duff looked at his watch. "It's after 2 o'clock. We'll leave it now and start on it when we are fresh in the morning." They had their lunch brought down to the office the next day and ate it at the desk. Johnson, who had been sent up to the stock exchange with instructions to keep an eye on prices and call them immediately anything out of the ordinary happened, reported back after high change.
"It's been as quiet as a graveyard all day, sir. There's all sorts of rumours flying about. Seems someone saw the lights burning in this office at 2 o'clock this morning. But when you didn't come to the exchange but sent me instead, I can tell you, sir, there were a lot of questions asked."
Johnson hesitated. Then his curiosity got the better of him.
"Can I help you at all, sir?"
He started sidling across towards the desk. "I think we can manage on our own, Johnson. Shut the door as you go out, please." At 7:30, they decided it was enough for one day, and they went back to the hotel. As they walked into the lobby, Sean saw Trevor Haynes disappear into the lounge and heard his voice.
"Here they are!"
Almost immediately, Trevor appeared again with his brother. "Hello, boys." Jock appeared surprised to see them. "What are you doing here?"
"We live here," said Duff.
"Oh, yes, of course. Well, come and have a drink with us," Jock smiled expansively.
"And then you can pump us and find out what we've been doing all day," Duff suggested.
Jock looked embarrassed.
"I don't know what you mean. I just thought we'd have a drink together, that's all."
"Thanks all the same, Jock. We've had a hard day.
I think we'll just go on up to bed, Duff said. They were halfway across the lobby before Duff turned back to where the two brothers were standing.
I'll tell you boys something, he said in a stage whisper. This is really big. It's so big it takes a while for the mind to grasp it. When you two realize that it's been right there under your noses all the time, you're going to kick yourselves.
They left the Haynes brothers in the lobby staring after them and went up the stairs. That wasn't very kind, Sean laughed. They won't sleep for a week.